One good way to get started is to come in as a passive investor. And I'm not just saying that because I happen to have a fund or Abel happens to have a fund. I started out that way as a passive investor. The other thing is educate yourself. There's a ton of good books out there. There's a ton of good podcasts, you know, including this one, you know, to learn. But you invest in yourself first and get yourself educated. And that's the best way to get started in the business.
Hello, hello. My name is Abel Pacheco, and you're listening to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast, how to build wealth like the 1%. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I'm the principal of Five Talents Capital. We're a San Antonio, Texas real estate investment firm, and we're actively invested in 1,500 doors of commercial real estate worth $150 million, much of which is right here in San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo City, baby. I'm also a fund manager, a capital allocator, and a servant leader who learned how to invest like the 1%. And on the Five Talents Podcast, I enjoy helping others learn and doing the same. So if you're seeking investment strategies to catapult your family wealth and generate passive income, even in today's volatile market, this show is for you. Because each week we're bringing you interviews with PE firms, investment advisors, financial planners, tax strategists, VC funds, and many others who are highly skilled in handling money, good stewards of capital, and individuals who advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So each show, we're going to provide you insights and actionable steps that you can implement to become a better investor. You're always going to learn something that you can apply in your own investment journey on the Five Talents Podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. All right. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the Five Talents Podcast. We are super excited today. Yet again, another amazing guest of ours and a good friend, Jeff Greenberg. Jeff, how's it going, brother?
Hey, it is going fantastic. I'm excited to be doing this with you.
Yes, I'm excited, man. As long as we've known each other, I'm very happy that we finally get to record something. And if you don't know Jeff, you need to get into his world a little bit. The guy's the man. He's the CEO of Synergetic Investment Group. So Jeff has had literally a couple hundred million dollars worth of real estate investments in one shape, form, or another. He's been involved in a lot of commercial real estate, really about 2,000 plus doors. The guy has had many multiple exits, in other words, full cycles, bought, successfully ran, sold, and you know, turned around a number of units. He's just like one of us, yeah, I would say, in the terms of, you know, started residential 2005, 2007, started doing some, you know, massive education, commercial real estate, and then just got after it. 2010 and beyond has been running full cycle, been running and cranking away at commercial real estate. So I'm excited to hear about, you know, some of the past and what he's doing now and talk a little bit about his fund that he's doing. So Jeff, in your own words, brother, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do. And man, we'll start a great conversation here.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Abel. This is great to be on your podcast. And for the time that we've known each other, definitely. I think we met in Clubhouse, didn't we?
Hey, the Clubhouse. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's where we first met.
I think I agree. So someone that was just a voice on a social media podcast during COVID, man, 2020, 2021, you couldn't even get out of the house. And what a great app for a great time, and got to meet somebody like Jeff. And then we get to meet in person. It's just a real genuine individual. So Jeff, yeah. Man, I'm glad I got to meet you, bro.
Yeah, that was fun. We got, where was that? I was out in California, wasn't it? Where we actually got to spend some time together.
I can't remember the first time.
Wasn't it IIREC?
The Intelligent Investor Real Estate Conference, probably in LA. It's probably in LA.
Yeah, because I got some pictures.
Sunshiny.
I got some pictures.
The sunshine was out. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Anyway, yeah, you got a good overview. I started doing REOs, you know, bank-owned properties back in 2005. But the problem was we found a property, we put an offer on it, and the bank didn't know what the hell to do with the properties that they had already foreclosed on. And it took a couple months before we would get a response. Well, because prices were dropping so bad that by the time they responded, we had already lost a lot of the value. And so it was like catching a falling knife. You know, you just couldn't quite get a hold of it. So I said, well, this just isn't working in this market because the prices were going down too fast. And then I heard about commercial real estate, that you could actually get into commercial real estate with a limited amount of money and use other people's money to actually get into the deals. And that's what I started to do, is I put my money into my education and started learning about commercial real estate and learning how to help other people get into deals and use that money to actually close on commercial deals. And so we closed on our first deal in 2010. And
What was it, Jeff?
That was a 20-unit property in Texas.
And you were living in California.
Yeah, I was in California. And my partner, my business partner, lives in Alaska. She's still up in Alaska. So we never saw each other unless we were visiting a property or we were going to a conference. Otherwise, everything was on the phone back then it was just all on the phone pretty much.
Wow. Well, there you go. And then you'd meet at a property and we determine you're going to go buy it. But geography has no bounds in today's time and technology. From looking at properties, partnering with people, especially even now, from 2010 mm-hmm. to today, man, virtual world, you can spend a lot of time on the internet. You can scope out a property, you know, real time and not even be in the same state. That's awesome. So that's what you guys were doing, a 20 unit. How did it go? How'd your first one go, Jeff?
It was a seminar, as a friend of mine says, the deal went fine. There just wasn't a lot of money in it. The part of the problem was it was a three-year-old property. So it was brand new. It was 100% occupied, and it was in a community that was a slow growth community. So kind of where do you go from there? You know, we really didn't understand the value add, and there was really no value add. You know, it was a three-year-old building. Well, I mean, it was actually five fourplexes, but they were 3 years old, and it was 100% occupied, and they were already paying the electricity. So we were trying to figure out how do we, you know, add value. We were trying to raise rents, but that was a real strain trying to get people in to pay the higher rents. It was in a great area. Everything was great about it. There was just not a lot of value to be added. We tried to build back water, but that was pushing it. We hit a lot of resistance. And the biggest problem was we had to hang on to it for long enough that we could add value, that when we sold it, we had a profit to give to our investors. But, you know, I mean, it was a good deal. It just wasn't great for us because we couldn't really add value and get our investors a better return than we were able to. But it was a lesson. It was a lesson learned.
Many times the first deals that we do are that way, right? We get education. We learn how to do it in theory, and then we've got to put our experiences or our theory education into action to get those experiences. And you got to push forward though, right? You got to take action. Can you imagine if you never did your first deal? Like what would have happened, right?
We learned so much out of that deal. We learned, you know, a lot of times you learn when you do deals, you learn what not to do just as much as what you learn to do. Yep. So. Yeah, that was definitely a lesson. Yeah. But our next deal was a whole different package. That was a whole different one.
Well, that's awesome. Let me pause here for a few minutes though, right? Because so for those listening, right, you see $200 million worth of real estate investments, a lot of success along the way from that first 2010 project, 20 doors till today, right? Well over 2,000 units or 2,000 doors, right? So we're trying to figure out, you know, how do people get started? And if you're listening and you're one of those individuals that's, you know, trying to bridge that gap, Jeff, you know, let's help us with a little bit of mindset, right? Did you come from a real estate family? Did you have a lot of wealth behind you? Was this your first time investing? You know, just give us a little bit about your background, man. How did you grow up and, you know, leading from back then till your first deal?
Absolutely. No, I came from a blue collar family. My dad was a truck driver and just a middle, you know, middle class family. My dad, you know, always telling us to, you know, go to college, get a job, stay with that job, you know, get a pension. He was a Teamster, so he got his, you know, his pension from his truck driving.
Wow. Yeah.
But the whole thing was, is, you know, you get a job and you hang with that job. And, you know, that was the mindset back there. You know, the whole thing that you hear when you read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book. And, you know, that mindset just didn't work for me after a while, you know, especially when I was going through my divorce, part of my funds disappeared. Part of, you know, my house disappeared. So all of a sudden, what am I going to do now? And that's what got me into the real estate, is I knew that what I had saved up over the years just wasn't enough to retire on.
Yeah. What did you do as a profession before?
I was in technology. I was a network engineer. We took care of the infrastructure. You know, a lot of people I hear in this business are software engineers. Well, I was the hardware. We got the company working. We had a billion-dollar company that we made sure that the engineers had functioning services. We kept the business running. So that's where I came from, the IT side of it.
That's awesome. I don't know if we've ever talked about, if I did in the past, I may not have remembered. I had a tech background also. I worked at Rackspace. But Rackspace was an IT hosting company, and we did servers as a service, or yeah, that infrastructure as a service. So I wasn't one of the engineering, the networking types, but we would help business to business, and that the end consumers, they would purchase infrastructure, IT, hosting, and some of the networking engine, you know, all of the security around it as well. So, and that's awesome. I didn't know that you had that background.
Yeah. As I was leaving the business, we were starting to put a lot of stuff off site, because initially all our servers were there with us, but we were starting to put our stuff in data centers out in the cloud and et cetera, and doing a lot of virtual machines and all that kind of stuff.
So that's awesome. So I think, like a lot of our listeners, you probably made some pretty good money, you know, doing that, especially towards the end of your career. You had a number of years where you were working, and your W-2, your wages were going up. So the switch was like, you know, when was the big aha to say, I need to leave, you know, technology, or I need to figure out how to do this real estate thing?
Well, the big reason, motivation, as I said, was my divorce. That kind of woke me up and made me decide that, okay, you know, the house isn't going to be my big savings, and the amount of money I was putting away in my 401k was not sufficient. So that was the big aha, that I had to start doing it. But I didn't quit my job for quite some time. I was doing both for about 8 years.
A lot of people ask me this, Jeff, like, how do you go from your full-time job to full-time real estate? So maybe give me a little bit about that switch for you.
Yeah, well, it was about 8 years. And now my business partner, the one I mentioned from Alaska, she was full-time. So that made things easier. If I couldn't make a meeting or something, she was able to cover it. So we helped each other out whenever one couldn't make it. The transition was, I mean, I was looking at it and I was starting to do well on the real estate and deciding, okay, when am I going to make this decision to change? But it's kind of nice to know that you've got insurance. I had young kids, and so it's nice to know you had health insurance, and you don't really want to get rid of that because that's pretty expensive. Yeah. And as my kids got older, you know, and were leaving the house, it made it a lot easier. But the other thing was, is in IT, you're constantly learning new things. You're constantly having to stay on top of stuff. There's always something new. And I was putting so much effort and time into learning real estate that my mind just couldn't do both. I got to a point that I said, wait a minute, you know, it's more important to me to learn real estate than to do the IT stuff. And so it was putting a big strain on me. But my boss helped me out make the decision, and it, in a good way.
Yeah.
Well, no, I had a review. I got a very good review, and he decided he was going to give me a new project. And he said, here, you're going to learn this new product, and you're going to have a couple of guys to work with. You're going to lead the team and implement this new product. I don't even remember what it was. And I kind of looked at him, and I couldn't imagine having to figure this new software out and having to teach people and train people. And I turned to him and I said, no. And he looked at me, what? I said, no, I'm going to give you 60 days notice. Now, the only reason I gave him 60 days is bonuses were coming. And I didn't know when the bonuses were coming. So I didn't want to miss out on my bonus. But I was able just to say, hey, you know, I'm going to be out of here. I don't have the brain power to go and start learning this new thing while I'm running my real estate business.
Yeah.
And so I figured, okay.
That just kind of 8 years though, you pushed it pretty good. You pushed it pretty well to, like, it sounds like 8 years of full time as a IT professional, an engineering professional, networking professional, and then, you know, at the same time investing in real estate, investing in real estate, investing in real estate. We did similar. We had about 10 years before we made a full time jump. So for anybody that's listening now, you know, if you could take that nugget from Jeff and I, it's you can't really go full time, especially if you're living expenses are really high. Work as much as you can, save as much as you can, invest in your education and yourself is what I heard Jeff say. Education, investment in himself, learning how to do it, pushing that education, taking action, and having a great partner to kind of help fill in the gaps as long as he could go. And then, you know, once you make that final mindset decision is what I think I heard. Also, it's like, nope, I'm going to go all in. He helped me make that decision.
Yeah, there was a couple advantages I had that, I mean, one, I'm in California, so which means I could get up in the morning, get up early and make calls to Texas.
There you go.
Across the time zone. So that worked out. Also, I had the flexibility of arranging my lunch break anytime I wanted it. So if I needed to take on a meeting, I would take my lunch break. My partners in the office would sit there and learn all about real estate when they would hear me having these conversations all the time. And my boss was pretty flexible about it. And if I needed time off to go visit a property or to go to a conference or something, he was real good about it. So that made it a lot easier to stick it out a lot longer.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Five Talents Podcast with me, your host, Abel Pacheco. And since you're listening to the show right now, I wanted to break for a moment to tell you thank you so much for subscribing and following the show. I also want to give you access to our simple wealth case study for busy professionals that we explain how we invested in $150 million of commercial real estate to generate passive income. So I'm sharing with you how I personally build wealth like the 1% and explaining how you can create passive income in real estate without having to manage it yourself. So do yourself a favor, take a moment now and go to www.5talents.capital. That's the number 5 talents, T-A-L-E-N-T-S dot capital. And you can register, watch our video recorded case study, and we're going to give you access to our investment club as well. If you want to see like all of our next moves, every single investment move that we make, future investment opportunities, and even perhaps invest alongside us, go to our website now. We look forward to sharing more. You can register at www.5talents.capital. And we look forward to having you as part of the club.
Yeah, get it on.
Well, I appreciate it. So now let's fast forward to today. Today you have had an amazing portfolio here, Mr. Jeff. $200 million, 2,000 plus properties. Like we ran down in the beginning, many multiple projects and successful exits. You're also running a fund. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing today? And we'll just continue on, man. How did it turn out?
Well, the thing was, all of the acquisitions and all the properties that we had was phenomenal experience. But I decided that operations and acquisitions really wasn't what excited me anymore. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. The responsibility is all on my head because I was in all of my deals. I was either the main GP or my partner and I were the main GPs on the deals. But I also had other responsibilities, including raising equity. And I found that raising equity was probably what I enjoyed more. I didn't really enjoy the operations. I didn't enjoy being the asset manager. And the last deal that we did, I had brought somebody on to do the asset management. And she did such a phenomenal job, and I enjoyed working with her. I decided that's all I really wanted to do, was to work with good quality deal sponsors and just help by bringing in the equity. And so that's where I moved over to the equity side of it, and then went into creating the funds that I'm running now.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your funds and what you have structured and how it's going and you know, what's it doing?
Absolutely. I've got two funds. I've got one's a 506B fund. The other's a 506C. So one can take only accredited. The other could take both accredited and sophisticated investors. But what I really like, what I really got excited about these funds is they're customizable. And when I say customizable, that means that people can go into the funds and go into the opportunities. As I bring opportunities in, they could go into the ones that they want. They don't have to be in every opportunity that I bring in. And so because of that, they can diversify, because I can bring in some cash flowing, heavy cash flow, others maybe higher capital appreciation. I can diversify into all different types of assets and not worry about people not wanting certain assets, because that's their choice. They could pick and choose which ones they want to be in. So I could go into self-storage, mobile home parks, RV parks. I haven't gotten into a lot of those yet, but I'm looking at those. Multifamily. Right now, we got multifamily, short-term rental, and we do have a Bitcoin mining fund in there. So
a little bit of diversification there.
Diversification, but I'm also looking, as I said, as RV parks and the self-storage.
Yeah.
And people may or may not like specific asset types. And because they're diversified and customizable, people can be in whichever funds they or whichever opportunities they want and still get 1K1 at the end of the year.
Got it. No matter what. How did you set that up? How does that work? The inner
work? Well, it's with a specific platform that allows you to do that and helps along the way as far as keeping track of that. Because it could be a accounting nightmare keeping track of all of the different, you know, opportunities that people are in.
Yeah.
But on this platform, they're able to keep track of it through software.
Got it. Care to talk about the platform or?
Yeah, I can mention it. I mean, it's the Avestor platform. And through their system, you know, they will keep track of all the different opportunities. So that works out. And then I'm also testing out another platform that we're working on with the developer to possibly be doing it on the one, because actually my funds are on two different platforms.
Okay, got it.
I've got Cashflow Portal on one of my funds, and they're working very hard to make it work with the customizable. Avestor is set up that way, and so I'm keeping my options open on the platforms.
Got it. So what kind of deals are y'all looking for right now? It sounds like a little bit of diversification, so that's number one. Real estate, multifamily, I heard short-term rental. You guys even have a mining fund, Bitcoin mining fund in there. You know, we're recording this February 2023, right? There's all kinds of craziness in the market right now. And when I say, you know, craziness in the market, Fed is moving rates up. They continue to go up. You know, when you look at projections, for those that are listening, you're trying to say, you know, how much longer is this going to happen? Well, all the projections show that interest rates are going to keep rising till middle of this year. And then there's debate on when they do come down, are they coming down a little bit and then a long tail of high interest rates? Are they going to come down a lot and then a long tail? What are interest rates doing? So they're continuing to rise and they're going to, you know, forecast it to stay pretty high in 2024, all the way maybe through 2025. Cap rates are compressing. It's harder to find deals. Nobody wants to sell deals right now. Man, there's so much stuff that's happening in the market. February, again, 2023. So, you know, we're trying to find deals. How about you, man? What are y'all doing and what are y'all looking for?
I'm looking at a couple things. One, I'm looking for cash flowing assets. So one of the things, I'm talking to some people that are buying RV parks and campgrounds that are still buying them at, you know, 8 caps and being able to get some good cash flow. That's one of the things that I'm looking at. But I'm also on the multifamily side, I'm looking for people that are finding distressed assets. And when I say distressed assets, I mean distressed debt, because there are people that may have gotten into trouble with the bridge financing, and all of a sudden the interest rates are going up and they may have to sell at a loss. There may be some people that are getting foreclosed on, but there may be others that just need to sell it quickly and not, you know, not lose capital. So if those kind of deals come up and they're good opportunities, we may get into some of those. The deals that I'm getting into now, though, pretty much either are fixed debt. The one we just closed on 180 unit in Kansas, and it had fixed debt, low leverage, with a group that I've worked with, well, at least a couple people that I've worked with before, and I know them very well. But my big thing is when I look at an opportunity right now in this environment, which, as you said, is a little crazy, number one is, how are you protecting capital? What is being done to make sure the capital's protected? And like I said, fixed rate debt is one of the things I like. Low leverage, you know, low percentage of a loan, having significant reserves available, you know, to make sure that if we do go into a recession, it's protected. Low break-even occupancy, because we don't know if occupancy might go down. We don't know if rents may go down. And so I want to see how things are being protected. That's the only reason I'll get into multifamily. But otherwise, I'll look at other asset types that may be less susceptible to some of the issues that we're seeing in multifamily. But I do believe there's going to be some great opportunities coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Those opportunities, right? We're all looking for the right ones. So just to kind of recap for those, you know, maybe that you're a little less active in the space, maybe you're one of the passive investors trying to decode some of these, you know, some of the terminology, right? So what we are discussing is that when you bought a deal, let's just say a couple of years ago, 2020, 2019, 2020, 2021, well, if we bought a bridge loan or a variable rate interest rate, we likely have a very low interest when we purchased it, but that variable rate has now expanded. There's 400 basis points higher from the Fed that's there. So the 10-year treasury is now approaching that 4.5, 4.7, plus the spread that you originally bought this, or you originally financed the debt with. So if you add the 4.5 plus a spread, your interest rate may be at 7, approaching 8, or even higher. And so it's a very different deal. So now it's like, well, and all of our cash flow, it's being squeezed. And that is part of the discussion, is, are those deals going to come out for sale? So we're all looking for those. And then additionally, ways to ensure that your deal is conservative. So fixed rate, so we don't have to worry about a variable rate interest. You kind of have to measure it by looking at yield maintenance and prepayment penalties, but it's a great way to do it. Another one was the occupancy rate and the stress test to your occupancy rate, your interest rate. If you can stress them and say, hey, this deal can support a 9% interest rate, if it can support 70 or 60% of your break-even occupancy and still maintain and make sure to make the payments, that's another great way to do it, you know, and the lower leverage, you know, so trying to get as little money from the bank as possible, lowering your leverage, it basically provides you with a less risky asset. So all great points, Jeff.
And the one thing about that, the one advantage, you know, from being an equity raiser is, in the past, I can remember looking at hundreds of deals and analyzing hundreds of deals to make an offer on maybe 20 of them and maybe to get one or two. I get to look at the deals that somebody else has looked at 100 deals. So after somebody else has looked at 100 deals and finally found the one that they got accepted, and all I have to do is evaluate that one deal. And all I have to do is look at their assumptions and decide whether or not I like their assumptions. And I've got no skin in it, you know, because I haven't spent 6 months trying to get this deal. So I could say, oh, you know, it's very easy for me to say no. I say no to more opportunities than I say yes to. And, you know, I understand as a deal sponsor, you're putting a lot of time and energy and possibly money into getting those deals. And you know, you want it to work. When I look at a deal, I look at it and say, why doesn't this deal work? It's easier for me. I just said, oh, I find things I don't like that are a deal breaker and I'll walk away.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Love those points. So Jeff, for those that are trying to reach out to you, who do you want to reach out to you and where should they go?
Well, I'm always interested in talking to new investors, you know, as far as those people that, you know, want to be active investors, but maybe they want to start out passive, which I really do believe is a great way to start, is start out as a passive investor. And you get an inside picture of what's going on a deal, gives you the ticket to the door to ask all kinds of questions and learn about opportunities. So I'm happy to talk to people about either being passive or active and, you know, help you on your path to this business. But you could reach me at jeff@synergeticig.com. And you could see the spelling for Synergetic behind me. And I also have a giveaway for your audience, and that you could reach at sigcre.com/sponsor. It's questions to ask a deal sponsor. If you're coming in as a passive investor, the questions to ask. If you're a deal sponsor, it's questions that you could be looking at, you know, realizing that your investors may be asking those questions. And so you'll have your answers prepared. So it's good for either active or passive investors to learn a lot of these questions to be asked.
Yeah, love it. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks a lot, man. So I'm excited to have you on. You know, just I think you've got a fantastic model. I agree with you on a lot of points, my friend. We started our third fund, Five Talents Capital is into the third round this year. We're doing a 506C. So, man, for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned, like if we are looking at deals, I want to look at all of our 100 deals till it gets to that one final deal that we said yes on. But we have a lot of other people sending us opportunities and investments and trying to say, hey, can you, you know, you want to invest in our deal? You want to point your fund our way? So we get to look at their deals that they've looked at 100 of them to kind of find the best investment. So I agree with that mindset completely. We're doing a Texas multifamily diversification fund. So our goal is 3 to 5 assets this year. We've said yes to one of them. I'm hoping the end of the year brings us those other 2 or 3 at least to have a little bit of diversification in it. But the mindset, we've got to try to stay conservative as possible. Got to be good stewards of investor capital. Got to make sure that we're saying no a lot, unfortunately, not because we want to, but because we have to, right? It's just a mindset of just trying to find the right deal. So if anybody's interested in learning a little bit more about that, go to fivetalents.capital/ebook. Start here. It's a great place to learn a lot about the stuff we're talking about, and love to have you come invest with us and ping Jeff and tell him you heard him on our podcast. I'd be blessed to hear that as well. So it's been great talking to you. Jeff, is there anything we didn't get to talk about? Anything, you know, that you were excited to share, I just didn't get to ask, or any, you know, last minute nuggets of wisdom and insight for our listener base?
Well, the main thing I like to tell people, I mean, as I mentioned, one good way to get started is to come in as a passive investor. And I'm not just saying that because I happen to have a fund or Abel happens to have a fund. I started out that way as a passive investor. The other thing is educate yourself. There's a ton of good books out there. There's a ton of good podcasts, you know, including this one, you know, to learn. But you invest in yourself first and get yourself educated. And that's the best way to get started in the business.
I 100% agree, Mr. Jeff. So many people, you know, so many people ask me how we got started in real estate. And, you know, the first 10 years of our investing, we did it on our own. We asked realtors and mortgage brokers for advice and guidance, other people that we thought were experts. And we invested for 10 years. But the first time we invested in education, really dropping $20,000, $30,000, just literally for commercial real estate education. And we kind of did that once, twice, 3, 4 times, and realized the more we spend on education, investing in ourselves first, the best payoff came from that area. And then just like, you know, we hear often, I was a passive investor as well first. Myself and my wife, we invested in about 800 doors passively We did LP, limited partner for those that don't know LP. And we got to put some money in. It's a great way to learn a little bit more about the process and, you know, just get started as a limited partner first, especially for those that wanted to be active later. So I agree with you 100%. Look forward to meeting anybody that's interested in either route. So Jeff, it's been great. It's been a pleasure talking to you, brother. Thank you very much for joining the show. And we'll hope to connect soon at that next event, man.
Absolutely. No, thank you very much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jeff. Talk to everyone soon. See you on the next episode. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Five Talents Podcast with myself, your host, Abel Pacheco. We really appreciate you liking, following, subscribing, and leaving all the written reviews for the Five Talents Podcast. Each week, we're going to continue to bring interviews with private equity folks, VCs, advisors, financial planners, strategists, tax strategists, and other stewards of capital, many of which advise the wealthiest 1% on what to do with their money. So we appreciate you joining. Also, if you want to be notified of monthly future events we're hosting or attending, and if you want exclusive access to the same investment opportunities that have largely been reserved for the wealthiest 1%, many of which you've rarely ever heard about, go now to our website, watch our wealth building case study, and register to be added to our investment club. We're going to send you future opportunities, and you'll be able to watch all the moves that we make firsthand. Your investment journey is waiting for you to take the next step. So what is the next step? Go to www.5talents.capital. That's 5talents.capital and register today. Thank you again. We can't wait to bring you the next show. And thank you for liking and subscribing.